Bob, I have a cold opening concept.
Well, we call it a snippet, but what are you thinking?
Well, we wait until either the 6th of the month or 25th of the month falls on a Saturday.
Okay.
Then we both say together,
live from our podcast, it's Saturday night. Festive foreign film fans with Bob Baker, Mark Chandler, featuring Jake Fontana and special musical guest Sake.
The following podcast contains graphic descriptions of international celebrating and global merrymaking. It may not be suitable for angry or unhappy audience members. Listener discretion is advised. You've been warned.
Have you ever seen any of those foreign films? I don't like them.
Good news! Bring it to mine!
Some are born great, others achieve greatness, and some watch Christmas movies.
For Natale!
Both festive, aren't they?
Joyeux Noël!
Well, ho, ho, ho! Hi, Mark!
Wow.
I am so excited, and it's not because it's my birthday.
It is your birthday.
It is. And that's not it, though. I am excited because, if you recall, when we talked about Colombia and that tradition that they have on the night before my birthday to set out all the candles and light them up like they did in El Canto, I have spent all weekend finding every single candle in my house, from birthday candles to dining room candles. My house right now is a fire hazard, and I spent all day just lighting things up.
Did you actually find that many candles in Cary?
No, these are just ones in my house. I found so many. Wow. I found a bag of candles that I had saved from luminarias from years ago. I've put them everywhere. Mark, on your way home, you'll see this flickering light and smoke. That's my house.
I also vaguely hear sirens in the background.
So come on over and we'll make a birthday wish and we'll blow my house out.
Well, happy birthday, Bob. I'm glad you made it another year. Glad you were born. Your gift is in the mail.
Oh, good. Thank you. I hope it's not a candle. But Mark, here we are. We are back in December. It's so exciting. We wait for this time all year. It's so funny because people are like, you do a Christmas podcast in April?
Yep.
Like now they're like, oh, you have a Christmas podcast.
Yeah.
How timely. How seasonal. Every time we get here, it's still always a big surprise to me because, you know, you're waiting and you're waiting, and you're waiting. All of a sudden, Thanksgiving hits and it seems like everything just speeds up all of a sudden all around you.
Yeah.
Colorful lights, festive music, get everything out. Then boom, it's over. Pack it all up and put it all away. I wait and wait and wait. Comes, then it goes so fast.
What I've tried to do for the last 5 years, so I used to take all my Christmas stuff out. I didn't use every single decoration every single year, but I try to make sure that I take all the empty boxes and I put them back into storage. So it seems more permanent because a couple of years there, like I would take out the lights, I'd leave the light box in the cellar or the garage and I would trip over it. Then I'd have to put it back in. But I've taken this whole new approach of A, using every single decoration I have in my house. I'm serious. And things that don't make the cut to be public display, I put them in the basement with all my football stuff, all my Viking stuff, Philly stuff, Flyer stuff. 2 years ago, all that extra stuff that Sue was like, you know, that's from 1960, 50. I put it in the basement and I strung Christmas lights over it. The grandkids loved it.
I love that.
I hooked all the lights up to Alexa, so I can say, Alexa, turn on basement Christmas party. All the lights come on, the train comes on. So now everything
is that like you can really say, Alexa, turn on the Christmas party?
That's what I named that plug, Christmas party.
I absolutely love that. Alexis, I'm going to be talking to her all year.
Well, I recently shared with you, Bob, right, that I never thought about listening to our podcast via Alexa. And so just one day I was bored and the next episode had come out. So I said, Alexa, play Festive Foreign Film Fans. Just as a joke, I thought for sure she's going to say, I'm sorry, I can't help you with that.
Like our wives say?
Right. Instead, it was, oh, found Festive Foreign Film Fans. Would you like to play the latest edition?
Would you like to hear Bob or Mark?
Wouldn't that be a nice option? And so it played, right? I'm like, wow, this is so cool. Then after I did that, when the next episode was released, the little yellow circle was around. I said, Alexa, read my notifications. I thought it was going to be your bar of soap got delivered, your bubble bath. But it was a new episode of Festive Foreign Film Fans is now available. Would you like to play it? And I'm like, yes, I would. Please play it.
This is a pro tip for all of our listeners. Yeah. Please line this up with Alexa.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about downloading a thing. You have to remember. And you can actually get reminded.
And I was just talking about the tip to say, Mark, time for your bubble bath.
I'd appreciate that one too.
All right. Now, before we get to tonight's movie.
Yes.
We have to return back to beautiful Glacier View, Alaska. If you remember, that was a sparsely populated community of 375 people right outside of Anchorage. Yep. And it's literally called Glacier View because it's home to the huge Matanuska Glacier. And it has jagged mountains, valleys, and thick forests. But we didn't ask about any of that. What we wanted to know was the residents there had a really unique way of celebrating the 4th of July. And if you knew, you earned our artistic palette with blues like glacier ice, greens like spruce and moss, and whites like the snow on the Matanuska Glacier. It's our 4F sticker.
I have no idea.
They launch cars, trucks and RVs off a 300-foot cliff. This tradition started in the early 2000s when someone hit a moose and they needed to dispose of their wrecked vehicle and they didn't know what to do, so they drove it off the cliff. And since then, it's become quite a popular attraction. They gather to watch this event. It's kind of like fireworks, it's kind of like Evel Knievel. It's kind of really like a demolition derby, but... Wow. The good thing is, it's like, because I was worried. I'm like, well, what happens? Is there a huge pile of cars at the bottom? No, because they love nature so much in Alaska, whatever's left, they take them to the junkyard to be recycled.
Okay. And I just want to clarify, people inside these when they launch it?
No.
Oh.
Oh. Well, that's a good question. How do you launch it?
Right. Now, I guess you could jam a stick in the pedal or something, or just push it off. But
that seems dangerous too, though. Yeah. We'll have to do some homework to find out.
This year, in the pursuit of the pierogi. Next year, in the pursuit of cliff jumping.
You know I live on a road that's on a bluff. It's not 300 foot, though. You'll just see a car just fall right off.
Got to start somewhere, Bob.
Start small.
Want to watch a Christmas movie?
Christmas movies are our bread and butter.
We eat Chinese food and watch Christmas movies.
I heard it's the best Christmas movie since Home Alone.
Okay, Mark. We've been having fun. And now we're going to turn to our second documentary of the Festive Foreign Film Fans. We watched one about China. And we are off to the country of Georgia. I was going to say Georgia, and then people would be like, wait, you did Alaska, now you're doing Georgia? No, there's actually a country of Georgia. People should know that, and I hope you do. We're going to go over the snowy peaks of the Caucasus Mountains near the warm breezes off the Black Sea. And it's a place where Europe meets Asia. It's right at the corner there. Yep. It's Georgia.
Nice.
Now, the name of the movie is Life and Death of a Christmas Tree, which how appropriate for December. There are two people, and I think we had the same issue the last time when we had a documentary. These are real people, so you don't really have stars, but you do have a director. And so our director is Arturis Jevdokimovas. Usually you have to do these. I'm going to be struggling all show.
I am smiling over here, looking at Bob, saying, isn't this interesting?
So Arturis is a Lithuanian film director, screenwriter, actor, and producer. He studied TV direction in Lithuania and graduated from the Tbilisi Theater and Film Institute in the Republic of Georgia. He also had an internship at the Anthology Film Archives in New York. In addition to being a director-producer, he's also a film curator, an events and festival organizer. Can anyone who we ever talk about just be like one thing? They are amazing. All of you people, you put us to shame. This movie is from 2023. It's very, very recent. And we were able to get it by access given to us by Arturus. I reached out to him to see if we could watch his film because it's currently touring at film festivals. Yeah. And there's another person I want to focus on. This is a 13-year-old boy. His name is Luca Bilazzi. He is shown throughout this film, but at the beginning of the film, he's pictured with his best friend, 15-year-old Mata, who later would shoot him for unknown reasons. They just say he was shot by his best friend.
Yeah.
And you see him alive and the two of them playing together through the film, but it also features a really emotional scene with his mother at his graveside. And the thing she's saying raised so many questions to me.
Yes.
I think the boys were going to be featured in the film, but it's interesting that while they're doing this, this happens.
Yeah.
And how that affected the end result of the film. After it happened, Arturus made the decision not to remove them from the film, although the death is not part of the story, but it's significant. It plays through the whole thing. It kind of also helps us to understand the conditions of where they are living in Georgia.
Didn't see that coming.
Did not see that coming. And it tears at you because the kid is young. I mean, they say 13. He doesn't even look 13.
No.
And they're just kids having fun, playing basketball, goofing around.
Playing football.
Yeah.
As the film's going on, you see this priest at a grave. And you're not sure at first what the grave is, but they kind of spin the camera. They go from the side of the priest to where you can see the priest in front of you. And then you could see the gravesite where they've put a picture of Lucas. And you're like, oh, my God, he's dead.
Yeah. There's a couple of stunning things that first off, I'm like, oh, my God, they have a picture on the grave. You know what I mean? I had never seen that before. Well, let's talk about the movie. So like we indicated, it starts with a picture of two young boys. And a lot of the film is scenes. There's not going to be a lot that I can say because it's hard to convey, but I'll try to give an impression of what it was like. So they show the two boys together smiling and boom, message. Yeah. Then they talk about how 80% of European Christmas trees are grown from these seeds in trees in Georgia.
Right.
It's so interesting because it shows the people where they live, and you can tell it's rural, it's poor. The kids are kind of cute in terms of like their school is four people.
Right.
The one girl is like, I have no girls in my school at all. She's the only girl. And her friends are chickens, a cow, a pig. Yep. The workers, the work that they're doing is they climb to the top of these huge fir trees.
Right.
To pick the pine cones off that are at the top of the tree, and inside the pine cones, they shell them and are the seeds, and then they refrigerate the seeds, and then they send them to the Danes, who have developed this as a industry.
Yeah, they get the seeds, and they plant them, and they grow them, and you have, you know, the story of the pine cone pickers. You have the story of the two kids that we just talked about. Then you have the story of the family who owns the farm in Denmark. So you have like these three families or groups of people who are part of this documentary.
Did you get the sense it was purposeful? He was showing how the Danes live in Denmark. Beautiful home, talking about their duck that they buy. The disparity between the lives.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny, just my brain being what it is. So you've bought all these trees. Why don't you harvest your own damn pine cones, right? No, seriously. Like,
I know.
Why don't you do it? But then I thought, you know what? I felt like there was, to your point about like they're living different lives, that somehow that work would be beneath them. They would never be climbing trees. And also these people who are getting them, some people are using ropes and safety harnesses.
Some aren't. I mean, absolutely not.
I'm like, what the hell? I mean, I'd say these trees are probably, what'd you say, 40, 50 feet high?
Oh, yes. What I discovered in learning about the traditions there, for some reason, in this one area, Someone in the documentary describes it. There was a fire like 180 years ago
right.
in Telugu Forest, burned everything down. And the firs that grew after that, so they all grew at the same time. And for some reason, and this is why they are so popular, they're bushier.
Yes.
They are softer and the needles don't fall off.
Right.
Also, there's so many fascinating things about this. The Danish people who developed this business actually filmed when they first went there in 1991. They have the video of it. And that's where you see them kind of making fun. Because you see how they brought electricity to their homes. It was so
not
rigged.
Not code at all.
And they're kind of mocking it too. And what you sit there and you go, oh my gosh. And they went there, kind of made this deal with them, described how made the deal. And I think it was to be able to have the rights over these trees that then they were working with the mayor. They describe, because this was at the time when they were still part of the Soviet Union and on the other side of the Iron Curtain. So the mayor sat with a grenade sitting on top of the table while he's negotiating with them, I think just to indicate, like, what, don't step out of line or we'll all get it?
I guess. Yeah, I mean, that's hard negotiation. Going back to the two little boys, I do agree with you. I think they were pine cone pickers. That's what their life was going to take them to, right? Yes. You even see them collecting their own pine cones or using slingshots to try to knock pine cones down and fill their bag.
And they kind of see their parents and the others. And so when they're out in the trees, they're kind of hanging out there playing.
That's such a big gap for me for this documentary as to what caused that death. And maybe they don't know. Maybe they do.
No.
I don't know. I mean, you see the dad just wanting to know what happened.
What's hard for me is I want to believe that it was accidental. They don't get into it at all.
Yeah.
In fact, the only insight you get is when the mother is so upset, but the thing she's saying, she's blaming, I'm not sure who, like the other villagers. She put a fence up around his grave so that no animals would walk. It was highly emotional. And I think she was saying things that weren't true, but you don't know.
Don't know. I didn't know who she was cursing either. I thought it was maybe even like whatever their version of law enforcement is. Like, what did they do to even get the root of it? Like, did something happen with the harvesters out there in the woods? I don't know. It's such a big gap.
If you recall, the father at one point says he was wondering what forensics they did. Like, the boy was supposed to fall. If he was shot here, he was just fall here, but we found him over there. Yeah. And the cop was like, he said the law enforcement, the police were just like, it's snowing. There's no forensics. There's snow on the ground. The main thing is, so we get the rural scenes. The movie starts with the boy's funeral, and we don't actually know that it's his funeral. We see the workers leaving to go, and they're bringing mattresses and guns, and they sleep outside. Their truck breaks down. All of this giving us pieces of what their life is like. And we learn about how this developed. And then the person, the kind of historian who's describing from the area, he said tourists just came, and they liked the trees. And then they started to bring back pine cones from the trees.
Right.
And I don't know if the couple who are featured in here were the first ones to do this or not, sure, but they clearly noticed that there was a business opportunity here and they started to harvest these pine cones. There's a point where they say in Denmark, they used to get seeds from trees from Turkey, but they were not as good. And they say, these are the best. They're absolutely the best. And it's a multimedia. You get some of the home video. You get what they film. They also show a Danish news program did kind of a their own little mini documentary on this industry and talked about how they treat this like it's jewels to bring them into Denmark. We learned how this is done by hand. These are guys that have to climb, or women, I guess, that they have to climb all the way to the top of the tree, collect them by hand. And the problem you have, of course, is at the top of the tree, very narrow, very thin. And they actually even talk about, and I was trying to think why they did this, and you know, if you had to want to go to the next tree, it's going to take you time to go all the way down, go over and climb back up the tree. So sometimes they jump from tree to tree.
Yeah.
And there's a woman who describes how her husband, she told him she didn't want him picking the pine cones, and she leaves and he's doing it and he jumps from a tree and falls. So very dangerous industry. You see the guys, I think they feature that did have safety equipment, but you also saw some up there without any safety equipment. One of the workers describes, even if you have it on and you fall, you're just falling with safety equipment. Right. On.
Nothing looks safe about it whatsoever. Yeah.
That's pretty much the story. Yeah. Like I said, you have the scenes of the disparity between the two different groups. You learn about how the business developed. Yeah. And you see the poor boys and the sister.
They show some harvesting of the trees, you know, as they're getting ready for the Christmas season. And it's a very interesting documentary.
It's all about Christmas, and then it's not about Christmas.
Right.
I think Christmas, though, lends a whole undercurrent. Here's this dangerous industry to get people to get the trees that we put up. It's so depressing to see it's how commercial it is.
Just like with the documentary you saw from China, these people are putting their lives in terrible situations, terrible risk, so at the other end, people can have a joyful Christmas.
I know. How joyful is their life? Now, the one thing I do want, I think it's important to point out, and we'll talk a little bit more later, but the Danish group here, they don't say this in the film, but there are a lot of other Danish companies and others who really take advantage of this impoverished area. This group has really tried to pay fair wages, put more investment into educating the children there. Right. At least they're trying to help improve the area.
Right. So, Bob, was it festive?
Mark, oh my goodness, not at all. Like I said, the most fascinating thing to me was here, they're going to do a documentary about this. And that storyline in itself is fascinating. But then the death of this child. I was thinking they would have probably showed them anyway, like the kid, this is what it's like to live there. But I don't think they would have been as many scenes as they were. They kept showing them and playing. And remember the one where they're on top of the mountain?
Yeah.
Each time it was heart-wrenching. Oh, do we have to see the poor boy that we know get shot?
I have to track down this director. I have so many questions. So I agree. It wasn't festive at all. And it stressed me out, just like it did after watching the documentary in China about how we don't often think about our joy or celebrating any holiday or any type of joy. Maybe people on the other end of a supply chain that might be suffering because of it. I know my brother one time, we got in this really good, interesting conversation. He goes, but if they didn't have this, they'd have nothing.
I know.
And I'm like, that's a good point. So I don't know. It's
hard because you're like, oh, they're being taken advantage of. Oh, but they wouldn't have anything. Oh, but couldn't they have more? Go back and forth. Yeah.
I would love to have the director just about 10, 15 minutes with me, give me some perspective. What were you trying to accomplish? And then go back and watch it. But that truly would be the only way I'd watch this, if I had some perspective from someone who was close to the making of the film.
That I agree with. It was interesting. He ties the narrative together through scenes, basically, not dialogue, because it's a lot of different scenes. And you almost have to infer or interpret what's going on.
Yep.
But I will tell you how to say Merry Christmas.
There is nothing merry in Georgia.
Don't say that. The family, I want them to be happy. I want that little girl to find another girl to play with other than Manny the pig or whatever the pig's name
was. How do you say Merry Christmas, Bob, in Georgia?
Shubas Gilodzvat.
That's very good.
How you say Merry Christmas in Georgian depends upon your audience. You use Shubas Gilodzvat when talking to one person in an informal way. If you want to be more formal or address more than one person, you would say Shabbas Gilo Kaft. And you would change the order as well. Gilo Kav Shabbas or Gilo Kaft Shabbas. So again, you switch the order when you're talking to more formal, bigger people. What this means, it translates to congratulations with the word Christmas. So basically what you're saying is, I congratulate you on Christmas.
Congratulations on making it to another Christmas where people die because they're jumping from trees to trees. Yo, congratulations. You've made it.
And look at your beautiful Christmas tree.
Look at your beautiful Christmas tree. Hope you don't fall. Oh, God.
So the Georgian word for Christmas is shoba, literally meaning birth.
I like that.
But it's an old word for birth. So you would not say it for your own birthday. You use it only for Christ's birthday. It's an old way of saying birth. What's important to note, this is one of the countries where Christmas is not celebrated until January 7th. They're under the Eastern Orthodox Church. So you'll hear Happy New Year's before celebrating Christmas.
Gives them more time to pick cones.
I'm going to tell you about some customs. Let us talk about how the Georgians celebrate with their wide array of traditional foods.
All right. Thank God.
Meals typically include chicken or turkey. And then they have this satzivi. What they do is they take either the chicken or the turkey and they submerge it in this rich, creamy, spicy walnut sauce.
Ooh.
So it uses spices from the region. You have ground walnuts, garlic, and then a unique combination of dried herbs and spices like fenugreek, coriander, and cinnamon. It's submerged. It looks really, really good.
Yeah.
Satsivi means cold dish in Georgian, so it's served cold or room temperature. And another thing that will be served with it, if favorite during the holidays, is called kachapuri or cheese pie. Kachapuri is a national dish of cheese-filled leavened bread. Mm. And the name comes from the Georgian words kacho, which is cheese curds, and puri, meaning bread. Kind of like what we have learned somewhat with our pierogi. This is a symbol of Georgian hospitality. So if you went to someone's house, they would make sure at Christmas time, they would serve you the kachapuri bread as a gesture of warmth, generosity, and sharing. It's served on the supra table. That's their feast table, which symbolizes hospitality and abundance. They have in Guria, which is a province in western Georgia, they have a little variation of their kachapuri. They call theirs Christmas pie, and it's crescent-shaped. It's more like a pie filled with cheese and hard-boiled eggs. These Christmas pies, they're supposed to resemble the crescent moon, and they used to bake one for every member of the family, with the largest pie going to the oldest in the family.
Wow.
And then also, they'd make a special large pie, put it in the middle of the table, and put a candle in it, light the candle, and the woman who kneaded the dough and made it would pray and imprint a small cross of dough into the pies before they're baked.
That sounds good.
Yes. The reason why it needed to be shaped like the crescent moon is because traditionally the moon and eggs symbolized fertility, good harvest, abundance, again associated with those ancient pagan beliefs that a moon was a symbol of strength. The Gurion pie, the unusual thing is this one takes a lot more time. You have to begin days in advance because you'd have to have these boiled shelled eggs wrapped in a cloth. Then they'd put them in the fireplace so the eggs would get smoked. First you make all the eggs, then you shell them, then you wrap them up in a cloth, and then you hang them over your fire so they get very smoky. Today, now they say they just braise them in oil in a pan.
Oh, there you go.
And it's the eggs. The eggs are the one that make the difference between the Gurion and then the kachapuri.
Right.
And then sometimes, again, another thing that we've seen amongst others, they'll put a coin or a nut in the pie, and the person who finds it is supposed to have the best, happiest New Year.
Don't you think it'd be more ironic if they put a pine cone seed?
Yes. But I'm afraid the person would like swallow it and choke. Here's a unique one that we haven't seen before. They have not the Nordman fir. They have this, they call it the chichilaki tree. And you should look it up. It's made of shaved hazelnut or walnut branches. So it's like all these curls. Yeah. It has all of these curls on it. And the Georgians have been making this since ancient times. At first, you might look at it and go, well, that looks, you know, compared to what I see as a big green tree, might look ugly, but it kind of grows on you. And I can't remember what country it was that had Saint Vasily was the Santa. So this is supposed to honor that Saint Vasily. The curly shavings are like the beard. And he's the patron saint of animals and the harbinger of new happiness. And they would put a cross at the top of the tree, and the tree is then decorated with fruits and berries and flowers. They have two bow-shaped items, one called a kalpi and the other called a bokeri. And the kalpi is made from ivy leaves. And the bokkoli was a bread baked with eggs. Again, eggs, flour, and cheese. Life, fertility. And they're made in bows and they're put on the tree. And then after the holidays, the people would burn these trees, symbolizing that their bad luck or their misfortunes of the year would go up in smoke and to start fresh. Now, it's more common for Georgians. They'll have Christmas trees, but many people will still put up their chichiklaki.
We only saw one portion of Georgia, so you're speaking across the whole country. It's hard for me to imagine the people we saw in the movie do any of this.
Yeah, because you might need
maybe
money.
The food. Yeah. I got to be quiet. I'm angry.
Okay. Another tradition they have is the Alilo procession. I love this in the fact that how common it is that many different countries have kind of like a trick-or-treating around Christmas. That's what this is. People walk from door to door singing carols and collecting gifts. Now, the reason why it's called a Alilo procession is they will often sing this folk song, this called Alilo. And for our music, I kind of thought, do we do that one? But we didn't because it wasn't that great. They go, they sing, and they ask for treats. Usually they're given money. It's traditionally performed on Christmas Eve. So in the past, little children would go out on the evening of the 6th of January. That's their Christmas Eve, doing their trick-or-treating. When they were under the Russian influence, the Russians tried to stop it, tried to prevent them from doing it, but people would still do it. And today, the part with the children is only in the rural areas where it's pretty much a children parade. But in the cities now, it's become a parade for charities. So they raise money, and a lot of it's led by priests in parishes. And they bring a big two-wheeled wooden wagon, kind of like what you'd see like in medieval times. And they call it a yuremi. They would bring that along as they sing their songs, and people would give them gifts that they would fill up. And those are the gifts for the needy. And now that one I like, you
That's
know?
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, and they traditionally, they either take it to a children like an orphanage or a senior home.
I think about a two-wheel wooden wagon. I think about, bring out your dead.
That's exactly the one.
Bring out your dead. I'm not dead yet. I'm not dead.
Can you imagine bringing out a bunch of bodies to a senior home? I don't think they would go over too well. God. And last, of course, we should talk about who they have for Santa. Tovlis Babua, which is Grandfather Snow,
Father Frost.
He's the Georgian equivalent of Santa Claus. He brings gifts to children on New Year's Eve. And remember when we talked about Russia, they tried to push all the Christmas traditions on the New Year's Eve. He doesn't use a sled or reindeer. He's associated with Russia's grandfather, Frost, and he doesn't wear red, unlike our Santa. He's usually depicted wearing traditional Georgian clothing, such as a white fur cloak called a nabidi and a white sheepskin wool hat. Someday we have to just do all December dress like different Santas.
That would be so cool.
I know. Some of these outfits look, they're so much more interesting than the red and the fur that we
like,
have.
Like maybe the 12 days of Santa outfits.
Yes, exactly. The legend is that he lives in the Caucasian mountains and he descends from there. He doesn't have reindeer, but he still leaves presents for children. In return, what the children leave for him is churchkala. It's a Georgian candy made from walnuts and coated in thickened grape juice. And I've seen it. It's thick grape juice, walnuts, churchkala. They must have a lot of walnut trees in.
They must.
You know what I mean?
Based on what you described. Yeah.
This calls for some Christmas music.
Yes, this Christmas music.
What kind of Christmas music is that?
The least you could do is play some Christmas music.
And now back to Christmas music.
So Alilo was kind of a dud. I thought we could find a more upbeat, fun, Christmassy Georgian song, and I think we did it.
All right, let's listen.
Well, Mark, I'm glad you turned on the lights for that one. The song you were just listening to, Tavli Mosola by Saki. This is a little bit of a cheat, and I'll tell you why. As I just had mentioned, during the Soviet era, which for Georgia was from 1921 to 1991, a long time, the government, state policy of atheism, actively suppressed religious holidays, including Christmas. So they effectively banned all Christmas.
Oh my gosh. That's
and it was framed as superstitious and backward. Right. So what they did is they said, oh yeah, no, New Year's is the main winter holiday. So the lyrics of this song, Tavli Mosola, is the snow has fallen. And it describes snowy Tbilisi, the city. But it also includes some New Year's imagery. It talks about, I'll see you at midnight. The new year will soon open the door. And soon the bell will strike at 12 again.
I like it, though.
But it is considered a modern holiday classic and frequently played during Christmas and New Year's. It's performed by the band, the Georgian band Saki, and released in 2021.
It's really pretty.
Good. I know. Later on, you slow dance with me. So, Silent Bite.
Yes.
It's Christmas dinner.
Eat it, eat it, eat it, eat it.
Food they put out for Christmas Eve.
Eat it, eat it, eat it, eat it.
Most of your major food preparation holidays, Christmas.
Eat it.
What's up, food for Santa?
Eat it. If it's getting cold, reheat it.
There's no chili. No, chili's not a festive food.
Have a banana. Have a whole bunch.
So, Mark, we've been on a serious journey.
Very
this
serious.
Season
yes.
To learn how to make pierogi.
Yes.
However, Christmas is not only a time for feasting. It also provides us an opportunity for fun and laughter and to act like a kid again, right?
Yeah, I mean, this movie was just full of laughter, Bob.
I'm going to raise your spirits because in thinking about that, we're taking a little break from our food odyssey. Not completely, just okay. A little bit.
All right.
Because we're going to discuss the Latvian children's book called Mezinangi Pierogi.
All right.
Or The Wild Pierogi. This is a story that takes an unconventional approach to describing Latvian culture.
That's cool.
It is a fantasy story that features our favorite bacon pies and puts them on adventures. So it's told with humor. It has some absurd imagery and it has imaginative world building, like as if these foods were alive.
Wow.
What is most significant to us and why I'm describing it to you is because it features Latvia's most recognizable culinary symbol, the pierogi. What that means is Wild Pierogies, A Tale of the South Seas.
Wow.
It was published in 2003, and it was written by a man named Maurice Putnins, and he was a Latvian writer, artist, screenwriter, and animator, and one of these stories became an animated film.
No way!
Yeah. So this one was the first one. It was so popular that it became part of a fantasy series where they depicted confectioner's world, where all the characters are inspired by food. But the pierogi was the one that kicked it off. By transforming their beloved national dish into a featured character in a story, it was kind of a non-serious way for young readers to understand how food can shape their national identity, memory, and humor.
That's awesome.
As we've discovered by talking about these pierogies, they hold a sentimental place with Latvians. As we've heard and the various people we talked to, they were not only for eating. They were associated with Christmas, family gatherings, sure. Hospitality, festive celebration. We'd heard how the recipes are passed down through generations, and they seem to symbolize the endurance of tradition, especially when you think about the difficult times that this little nation has gone through.
Right.
We heard this from Sabine. You mentioned the word pierogi to a Latvian, and they think of warm kitchens at Christmas time, the scent of bacon, and that delicious, irresistible feeling that we have to get and try and eat.
Yeah.
It's incredible if you think about it, how this tiny pocket of savory goodness can mean so much, inspire such devotion, and has a children's book written after it.
I think it's awesome.
Yeah. So the Mezinangi Pierogi series takes these amazing buns out of the kitchen and puts them into the realm of adventure, gives them a personality. The Baragis in the story, they're wild, they're rambunctious, they're mischievous. In some ways, some would argue that's kind of a, like a cultural mirror. It invites children to laugh and imagine and parodies these national symbols. But in doing this, it makes them even more accessible and popular with kids. So it's reinforcing how pivotal they play as part of the culture. Since Christmas is a time for serving pierogi, we know that. Someday we will try to eat that. We also should celebrate these books because they are playful, they're unconventional, and they're honoring that favorite dish that we have never tasted.
I think it's awesome. And I mean, how insightful were we to both pick this as our favorite food? What was the star alignment? What was the serpentipity that occurred? That's amazing. What a find.
I know. It is so funny. And it to have stumbled in and all we cared about was the bacon.
Yeah. And the onions.
Yes.
And the dough.
Well, we're going to give you some Georgian trivia.
It's trivia.
Who would know that it is not France, not Spain, not New Zealand, but it is Georgia that is the birthplace of wine?
That's incredible.
Archaeologists trace the world's creation of wine back to Georgia to 6,000 BC. And this demonstrates the nature of this little country. It's a paradox where the reality is often the opposite of what is expected. It is a small country, but it bursts with myth and charm. It has landscapes that range from snow-capped peaks to subtropical coasts.
That's crazy.
It has a language, and we've seen it looking at the music, and nothing like any other alphabet. It looks like curly art. It feels both timeless and completely on its own. So we thought, okay, how about if we quiz you how the Georgian language is notable for having its words backwards compared to other languages. So whereas other languages would say dada or father, in Georgia, that word is mama.
What?
And mother in Georgian is pronounced dada. So, or then we thought, did you know that the Georgian horsemen, they were hired to participate in Wild West shows in the U.S. in the 1890s. And they were the ones who introduced trick riding to American cowboys.
That's amazing.
So we also wanted to see if you knew about the Annatory Crips in northern Georgia, where villagers would sacrifice and lock themselves in during the plague so they wouldn't infect others.
What's self-sacrifice?
I know. Can you imagine that?
No, that's nice.
I know. And also that there in Georgia, there is an underground cave complex that was built in 1000 BC, and it was still lived in up until the 1400s AD, underground.
Wow.
So
all those stuff sounds good.
All of them. But instead, we're going to offer you a prize if you can tell us about what is known as Georgian swimming. It is a swimming style based on a legend about ancient warriors who trained by swimming in this manner. If you know, we can provide you with the ultimate Christmas gift. Never needs batteries. It fits everyone perfectly, and you can't ever regift it. So skip the shopping stress, ditch the wrapping paper, and earn the gift that keeps on sticking. It's a festive foreign film fan sticker. Maybe we'll even provide a whole roll for you to hand out to your friends, your neighbors, the mailman, even your Starbucks barista.
Wow.
It's like your own Black Friday. Provide the answer to festivefans@gmail.com and you can kick your feet up and you don't have to worry because all your shopping woes are done.
That's perfect.
So Mark, as we head out the door,
yes,
I want to leave you with a quote by someone who never unfortunately got to see the beautiful Nordman fir trees all decorated, Helen Keller. And she says, "The best and the most beautiful things in the world cannot be seen or even touched. They must be felt in the heart. Wishing you happiness."
That's awesome.
That is awesome.
I love that.
So, Mark, as you know,
yes,
next episode is our penultimate, the pinnacle of our year. It is Christmas, our Christmas show. And so we thought we'll make it three of a kind, three guests, three movies, and bursting with triple the festive spirit that we have kept bottled up all year.
Oh.
We're inviting the three ghosts from Christmas, the Christmas Carol to come.
Yes.
So this year's celebration is extra special because we finally arrive at the country that's considered the birthplace of the modern Christmas. And Mark, there's a part of me that says, oh, do we have to do it now? Because then it's done.
Yeah.
But it's England. Yeah, England, we're going to England. I wish we could go there in Dickens outfits and just walk the streets of London and record our show. But instead, Jake will just, I don't know, dress like Oliver Twist. So we're going to celebrate and explore the traditions that we find there. But we're going to be talking about three films because these are our favorite films. We couldn't pick which one we liked better. Mm-hmm. But we are going to have to rank them. And they are, everybody get your pencils, write these down, About a Boy, Millions, and A Christmas Carol Goes Wrong. And you can find all of them because these are English films where they speak English as well. You can find them on YouTube, Apple TV, Tubi, Amazon Prime Video.
Everywhere.
Disney Plus. Quickly, Mark.
Yes.
The gifts to buy, the food to make, the decorations to hang. Those are not problems. Don't think of them as problems.
No, not at all.
They're all part of the magic.
Yep.
Don't worry if everything isn't perfect. The best memories are made from these little messes. Now, slow down, smile, and try to enjoy this season because, as I said at the beginning, it goes so fast. And since we have England next episode, keep calm and jingle on.
Wow. I will do that.
And let's go out and climb some trees and pick some pine cones.
No. Wait, before we go, what's happening in less than 2 weeks? Come on, what is it?
Mark.
For all our Chicago
fans. Think about it. I know.
What's happening?
And no. It's not all our Chicago fans. It's all our Midwestern fans.
True.
It's all of our bi-coastal fans.
That's true.
Anyone who...
We have an international airport here.
Yes, we do. We are having our second annual live event. It is going to be held on December 19th, which is a Friday night. Ooh. So that gives you time to get into town. It's in McHenry, Illinois, which is about 40 miles out of Chicago. So it's close. So it's still the metropolitan area.
Absolutely.
It's in a place called the Vixen Theater. We have special guests. We're going to have Cooking with Daryl Postelnick. We're going to have Jackie Kostick, who is an anchor on CBS News.
Yep.
It's going to be exciting.
And the Mayberries.
The Mayberries. Great music band. By the Mayberries. So we're going to have fun. We're going to have guests. We're going to have prizes. We're going to have trivia. And we're going to have Jake.
We have Jake.
Jake in person. Jake live.
Jake in person will be singing. Can't tell you what, but he will be singing.
Is it going to be...
Yeah, did you notice that I recorded that, but Jake really did more singing than I did?
Rudolph.
Guys, we can't wait. I think Bob's right. Unless you're in Australia, you should come.
And even then, extra day to get here. Yeah, so it's $7.50 a ticket. So, I mean, can you think of a better deal? You can't even buy a coffee for $7.50 now.
You know, it's funny. My cappuccino this morning was $8.50, so yeah, you're right. So
come on. We are worth less than a cup of coffee. That's our motto.
Well, we hope you can make it. It's going to be fun. Last year was fun. I think this is going to be more fun than last year. I think the lineup of guests we have is going to allow us to do some really new and exciting things. So awesome. Please join us.
Yes.
Actually, we're done.
Done.
It's over. Over, over. It's over.
It's over. Kaput. Finito.
It's over. It's over.
This has been a Waysound Studio production.
And sound engineering on our show is by Jake Fontana.